Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Stephen McCarthy from The Mental Edge, and we are here with Sean Goodsell. We are going to start off with Hall of Fame, and then we'll be back to talk about tuning into your mental dashboard.
Best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock. You can move a mountain, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame, yeah. As the world.
Good afternoon. Actually, it's good evening. We'll be taping this show for the first time and airing it tomorrow morning. And so we are in a slightly different mood than our normal morning run with coffee. We are now in the evening, ready to rock and roll. How are you doing today, Sean?
I'm doing great, Stephen. And I would just add to your initial statements that I think you and I were born to be evening radio guys.
I think so.
The morning just isn't our best time. I think evening is where it's at.
You know, I always wanted to be singing the blues or looking at the moon or something like that. You know, I think we should be, you know, like philosophical geniuses, you know, after 10 a.m. or 10 p.m., sorry.
Well, I don't know about you. I don't know about you, but for me, the hardest time of the day sometimes for me is when I lay my head on my pillow at night and all of these, what I consider to be rational thoughts, start nailing me from inside and all my philosophical ideas start to be played out. And So I become my most reflective self after 10 o'clock at night. So I don't know about you.
Yes, I agree with that. And the hard part so much, you know, with living life, you know, in our world today is that you have these very, very deep, very cool thoughts at 10 o'clock at night, and you think, I'm going to get up, you know, or, oh, no, I need to go to bed. And then you wake up the next morning, and then the busyness of the day just overtakes all the creativity that you had and all these really cool ideas, and you never seem to be able to regain them. I think it's a very big disappointment when you go to bed with these very, very, you know, like, deeply constructed philosophical thoughts, and then you wake up in the morning, you're wondering where you're going to take a shower first and shave or what you're going to do, and it just really messes everything up from that standpoint.
And then before you know it, it's 10 o'clock at night again.
And then it's time for the deep physiology.
You feel like you're living Groundhog's Day again.
Exactly. It's funny because I did hear a story about 20 years ago. Now I'm 45, and so now that would have been about 25. And it was by a truck driver that was one of those, he was from Oregon, where he, the big, huge trees, the redwood trees or whatever, and he would basically, you know, bring them down off the mountain and everything. And he said, I got to a point where the only thing difference was whether I brought the garbage out on Friday morning or not. And I'm like, well, okay. I mean, when you're down to the week, you know, and the only thing that changes is whether you bring the garbage out or not. That's getting a little bit much. You know, I think that you need to definitely change something up when you get to that point. But
you need to have a little novelty in your life.
Exactly. Alrighty, so we are talking about the mental dashboard today, and I am really very curious to hear your thoughts, because like we were talking about before we came on the show, this to me is becoming, as I get older, something that I think you become more aware of, that you really can turn the dial up on one aspect and maybe turn the dial down on another, or you need to really add that, or that dial's not working. I mean, there really is, life has this adjustment to it. So I'm very much looking forward to today's show.
Well, I am too, and part of the reason I established and developed this concept is because over the years when I've been coaching the athletes that I've been working with, and also working with parents and coaches, you know, everything in our life is set towards either a thermometer. You know, we talk about our weather. I know for you it's like scorching hot in Minnesota right now. But you wouldn't know it was that hot unless you put a thermometer on you know, the weather channel. You know, it's 100 degrees. Well, back in the days before they had thermometers, they just said it was hot. They didn't know how hot it was. They didn't know what was going on. You know, and you drive your car, and you have all these gauges on your dashboard of your car, and they inform you about certain aspects of how your engine is running and whether you have gasoline or not and what your oil pressure is. And the reason there's those gauges on your car is because those things are significant to the efficient running of your car, so you can have information to determine whether you need to put gasoline in your car, whether you need to put oil in your car, whether you need to make an adjustment in some fashion. And the same is actually true for the mental aspect of life. If you don't know, you know, how to filter the information and the experiences of your life in a way that helps you efficiently and productively live, then you're apt to pay attention to a lot of information that's really not all that important to the overall functioning of your mind and therefore of your life. So that's why I chose this whole concept of the mental dashboard, so people can have some tips and some tools for how to, you know, what gauges to put on their mental dashboard and then how to utilize those gauges for the efficient and successful working of their mind.
Yeah, I mean, I just think in the reflective moment of listening is that you really do make a lot of your decisions not even realizing which gauge is overheated, you know, which one is off, you know, which one is running on E. And I'm thinking even as a parent, you know, you are working with your family and you make the very quality assessment of the situation, and one of the gauges is it off, and you blow off the handle because something isn't right, and then you realize that you made a mistake, and it had nothing to do with your children. It had more to do with your gauge being off or you not paying attention to what's going on.
Right. Or maybe the gauge that you're looking at as being significant is really not all that significant. And
yep.
I think one of the challenges of life is to know what gauges to put on your dashboard, because, you know, everybody has different gauges on their dashboard. Some people think, you know, one thing is important. Some people think another thing is important. And part of why we don't get the results that we seek in our life, whether it be in our sport or in our family or in our business or in our relationships, is because we have the wrong gauge. And we believe that that gauge is important, when we find out later on, you know, that gauge really wasn't all that important. So the purpose of this show today is twofold. Number one, it's to make some suggestions about the type of gauges that should be occupying our awareness when we're performing, when we're competing, and when we're living. And by nature, we're talking about what things aren't all that important. And that's eliminating the myths that we live with and compete with and do life with, so that we can truly live attentive to the most important pieces of information that are associated with the best living and competitive practices out there.
Done. All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we'll come back and start to locate and talk about the different gauges or potential gauges on your dashboard.
Best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock. You can move a mountain, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you go find yourself.
Standing in the hall.
Straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the legends they thought never could be broke. Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know if you never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're dead.
You can be a champion on your chest. You can be a champion.
party. We are back. This is Stephen McCarthy from the Mental Edge today. And I would like to, before we get started into the dashboard, I would like to let everybody know that if you do have questions, you can connect with us on our website. We have our email addresses and phone numbers and such if you have some questions. Secondly, we do have consulting services in the area of individual athletes, you know, families. We also work with teams, even athletic departments. And so we do have a tremendous amount of products or different types of options for people. If you are looking for more information, you definitely can get a hold of me directly at 612-741-0982 or at McCarthy@themccarthyproject.com. So with that said, Sean, we have been talking about the mental dashboard. How do you want to kind of move from here?
Well, I just want to start by saying that all of us, whether we're aware of it or not, we have a dashboard that we are highly attentive to. You know, for instance, you know, when I was growing up, my dad was highly attentive to my attitude. And if my attitude was in any way not to his liking, his emotion and his activity towards me as a dad was significantly impacted by his perception of my attitude. And I had coaches that were very, very attentive. Their dashboard led them to be attentive to my work ethic. And, you know, I've had teachers that were attentive to grammar, and I had other teachers that were more attentive to understanding concepts, even if the attention to detail wasn't there. So my first point is just to say that we all are attentive to something. None of us are blank as it relates to what's on our dashboard of our mind. What I'm suggesting tonight is, number one, that we, first of all, become more aware of the fact that we can choose what we put on our dashboard. We can choose to decide what we're attentive to, what we care about, the information that we're trying to acquire. And because of that, it's really important to be very careful about what we believe is important, because a lot of us have decided that certain aspects of life and of sport and of performance and parenting and relationships, we've decided unconsciously that certain things are important. And because of that, we haven't done our due diligence to really determine whether or not those snippets of information are really that vital to our success and to our quality of life. For instance, you know, I know this is really a dumb example, but for many years I really thought it was bad to swim before an hour after I ate. Like somehow that was really, really important. That was on my dashboard. And for some reason that was really significant to the way I was brought up. So the first point is this, Stephen. I want to challenge the listener to be very, very careful about what they choose to value as important, because not everything that we've been taught to value as important is as important as we think it is. And I know in your realm, with the work that you're doing at the McCarthy Project and the work that you do in the strength and conditioning area of your expertise, I know that one of the things you're constantly doing through your radio show at the McCarthy Project is you are dispelling myths about the way certain people think about the body and the training of the body as it relates to life and sport. So really, without you really calling it what I'm calling it, what you're doing is you're trying to shape the dashboard of how people think and what information they allow themselves to become loyal to.
And I'm going to give it one quick example, because one of the biggest problems that I had was that I always felt that there had to be a right or wrong answer to this question. And I'll give an example of something that hit me this last week when I was talking to a swim coach from Florida State University, Frank Bradley. And we were talking about the concept of overtraining and some research that was done in the late 80s on the concept of overtraining, and that 4 out of 12 swimmers after 21 days had shown signs of becoming fatigued differently than just from the training effect. Well, science says, well, then there's a 30% increase in the, you know, in that athletes are overtrained in 21 days. Or on the opposite side, you could say, well, no, that just meant that there were four different athletes and there was eight other different ones. So you didn't, you couldn't make this black and white statement. It just depended on what side of the fence you were looking at. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, to add to your statement, I'll kind of go to another realm of current information, is that we have grown an epidemic of distracted and hyperactive kids. And now what's on our dashboard is a constant diagnosis of ADHD. And I'm not saying there aren't young people and adults that are heavily distracted and therefore their life is impaired because of the level of their distraction and their inability to manage it effectively. What I am saying is that it's become a lot more prevalent on people's dashboard. Therefore, we're diagnosing it more often, and therefore we're prescribing billions of dollars worth of medication when 30 years ago we had just as many distracted people. It just wasn't on our dashboard.
Exactly. It all depends on the perspective you look at it.
Exactly. So, but, you know, for purposes of our conversation today, I am really, really passionate about how individuals can program, and I don't like the word program, I actually influence or train their mind to notice certain types of information when most people wake up in the morning and they have absolutely zero understanding and or awareness of how important their conscious and intentional thought is as it relates to taking responsibility for paying attention to the information that's most relevant to the overall quality of their life. For instance, you know, most husbands, if you ask them, what are you looking for in your relationship with your wife? You could get 1,000 different answers as to what's on a husband's dashboard, but the question isn't what's on my dashboard. The question is, how is what's on my dashboard affecting the quality of my relationship with my wife? Is it improving the quality? Is it growing the quality of my relationship? Is it allowing us to become more bonded and more connected? Are we more on the same page than we used to be? And if not, then how is the information that I am paying attention to serving the quality of my life over the long haul?
I have just one quick question. You know, when you make the following the observations, how is it that you would know that, like in my case, emotions were too strong on my dashboard? I needed to put more logic in it, or more common sense, not common sense, that's the wrong word, but put more consistent thought into it. How do you make the distinction which is better to have on the dashboard or not?
So are you asking, how do you determine whether what's on your dashboard is productive or unproductive?
I'm just thinking of the words you use. More of, how do I know whether to put it even on the dashboard in the first place?
Well,
or should I take it off the dashboard?
Well, this is where three things come into play. Number one, I do believe that research tells us, I mean, it's like research does the work that we don't have to do to determine whether or not over the course of the long haul, the best practice that's being researched actually leads people to get the results that they seek. So the reason why research is so valuable is because there is a method of doing research that generates the reliability and credibility of the information, so that if research is done cleanly and done in the right manner, then I can trust the information that comes out of that research. And you and I have talked extensively about this off-air, Stephen, but if people are not willing to look at the work that people are doing to come up with what are the best practices in the aspects of their life that they're looking to improve in, then they get what they deserve, which is they can, you know, stick their finger in the air, lick it, and figure out which way the wind's blowing to determine what to do that day. And when you do that, you get the results of that, which is you don't get any confidence and you don't get any belief in your strategy to create the outcome you're looking for, and you kind of get what you deserve. So the first area of influence as it relates to what I should put on my dashboard is do my homework and look at what research is showing about that aspect of life that I want to improve in. The second part of it is I get to look at my results. I mean, if I'm looking to compete at a higher level and I'm looking to improve myself as an athlete, the only thing I need to do is, am I a better athlete? Is my speed better? Is my performance better? Are my results better? And that's another area. And then the third area is I really believe that we as a society have lost the aspect of community. I don't believe that I can see into my own life by myself. I do believe that I need people like you, Stephen, and my wife, and good friends, good colleagues that are willing to open my eyes to blind spots in my life, that if I was curious enough to get information from them, combined with research that's done along with the results that I'm gaining, those three arenas are in my mind the three sources of information that can give us what we need in order to pursue the right dashboard elements for us to experience the success that we want in life.
And before we move on to the next area, because I want to come to one area that I've been just really delving into and trying to understand in my life, is the power to test your ideas in a non-threatening setting. And what I mean by that is that you go into Starbucks and you see people from Somalia, and you can tell that they're talking in their native tongue, and they are just talking, you know, like they're debating. You know, you don't have no idea what they're talking about, but they're intense, they're all talking, and they're all working out their ideas in sort of a non-threatening manner. One of the things I think that, you know, I found for myself is in this day and age in America, you have no place to go to test your ideas. You know what I mean? We're either so busy putting it in or just spewing what we know that we don't get a chance to get that honest debate going on. How do you propose that we get into that community position and start creating the honest debate so you can test your ideas?
Well, number one, I think being intentional about being around like-minded people, people that have a desire to grow, people that have a desire to experiment and aren't afraid to throw their ideas out there. You know, there are people that are interested in what we're talking about. Not everybody's interested in it. In fact, there's more people that are not interested in it than that are interested in it. But I do think being around like-minded people, not necessarily philosophically right-minded people, but people who are oriented toward being around others that share the desire to grow and learn and expand their thinking and expand their understanding and seek that kind of experience. I think that's the one thing. But, you know, I wish I had a better answer to your question than that.
Yep.
And the reason I wish I had a better answer is because if I had a better answer, I would act on it and create the very environment that you're speaking of.
Because you think about it, because where the idea came out of originally was I was reading a book by John Taylor Gatto, and he quoted Ben Franklin's autobiography, and one of the things that he said his dad did purposely was literally, I don't know if this is literally, but as I understand it anyways, he would find somebody walking on the street home with, you know, by him or around him. He'd say, "You want to come over for supper?" And he would literally bring him home to the supper table, feed him supper, but part of the discussion would be to figure out and talk with this gentleman about his thoughts. And the young Ben Franklin sitting there at 12 years old debating all these different people on a daily basis, and he was expanding his mind, finding out what was good, what was not good, you know, how to approach, how to not approach. And I think it really is quite a lost art, and I'm very, you know, curious on how I start to create that in my own life, because I think that's important for kids to get a feedback, get an understanding, to test your ideas, not just go to school, say something stupid, and be chastised for the rest of the year because you're an idiot, so to speak.
Well, Stephen, you know, if you break down what you're asking in its basic form, what we have lost as a society, and I would say this breakdown has occurred with the advancement of technology, but we have truly lost the ability to engage in curious interaction with each other. And when you think about what you do every day, like I know you taped some interviews today. In order to prepare for those interviews, you had to generate a list of questions that you wanted to pose to the person you were interviewing. And I can guarantee you there's not a person that is being interviewed that doesn't enjoy being asked questions, especially about things that are within their area of expertise. It's their chance to shine. It's their chance to reveal their thinking and their logic and their works, you know, their expertise. But where do you find that kind of interaction outside of a contained process like an interview? You see kids just sitting at the lunch table engaging in curious interaction with each other. You see coaches who are asking kids questions about what they experienced when they were competing. Do you see parents asking intelligent questions to their kids about their day and about their experiences? I would say in all those arenas, we are basically bankrupt in our ability to engage in those types of interactions, which means we don't create and generate the environment that you just described wanting to be in.
All right, we're going to go to a quick break, but I'm sure that – could we that be a future show? Because that is a – I mean, I think about that. You make the statement, you know, of a parent. Well, you could obviously think of that. When you come home at night, you're tired, I'm done, I just want to go to bed – you are not interested in more games than not to sit down with your son and daughter and debate them on a certain aspect of philosophy. And or nor does it take time, because you have to warm up to it. You can't just walk in, okay, let's talk about right and wrong and it is or not is, you know, or something like this. And you're like, whatever, dude, go away. You know, I'm like,
right.
And so with that said, we're going to go to a quick break and then we're going to come back and you're going to start to name some potential dials on the dashboard.
The best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock. You can move a mountain, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you can find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame,
yeah.
And the world.
Distance.
walk straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records they thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know if you never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're
standing in the hall of fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna.
This is Stephen McCarthy, and I am with Sean Goodsell. And I think we have sort of laid the groundwork, you know, to the idea of a dashboard and understanding how and why you may want to make adjustments. And, Sean, you had mentioned that you have a couple things that you would like to say, okay, these are things that you need to think about to put on your dashboard. What might those be?
Well, again, let me just describe that the dashboard is a metaphor for the types of information that you are looking to be attentive to. And so the first concept that I think is really important to play with on a daily basis as it relates to our own ability to generate the life that we want to create is I do believe that we need to play with the metaphor of being intentional versus being passive. I think there are too many people that have a way of thinking about life where they think that things are just going to come their way. They read a book or they listen to a tape or they hear something on TV and they think things are a lot easier than they are. And a lot of people are looking for ways to get rich quick or get successful quick. A lot of athletes look for shortcuts. Sometimes we as parents look for ways to take shortcuts with our kids. The reality of it is that whatever I'm willing to intentionally pursue, I have a credible reason to believe that I can create success. If I'm not going to intentionally pursue something, there's a really good likelihood that I'm not going to be successful at it. So I encourage the listener to choose wisely what they intentionally pursue. And what they choose to allow to be passive about, I also encourage the listener to be careful about. Because what you choose to be passive about might actually be the thing that will end up creating vulnerability in your relationships, in your competitive, you know, spirit or performance. And therefore, being intentional and being passive are two things you got to keep on your dashboard so that you can confidently and passionately pursue things that you believe are connected to the kind of life and the kind of performance that you want.
I don't know. It's funny because you make those statements and you pass along your thoughts, and it makes so much sense. You know, I think, you know, we've experienced it a little bit in the development of the show. You know, we think that, oh, man, if we just put this show out there, man, everybody's going to want to listen to it because, you know, XYZ told me if you just do a podcast, everybody will listen. You know what I mean? It has a lot of applications in more than just sport. I mean, it has a lot of applications in marketing. I mean, so many different aspects of life. Just because somebody said, that doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Well, and I think if we were all honest with ourselves, I think we all believe that if we want something bad enough, we'll get it. But sometimes it's difficult to understand that because we want something doesn't qualify us to get it at all. The people who get aren't the people who want. It's the people who act. And if I want to have a great relationship with my kids, I have to be intentional about that. I can't just wake up in the morning because I'm their dad and because, you know, I go to work every day and try to provide a nice, you know, family and living for them that they are going to respect and love me. I have to intentionally pursue each of my kids in a manner that is consistent with how they're wired as a person. And I have to do that every day if I want to increase the odds that I'm going to win the favor of my kids. Same with my wife. It's not like because I put a ring on her finger and she put a ring on my finger, but the day that we got married ensured that our relationship was going to be good. I want to intentionally pursue the building of that relationship so that I can win the favor of my wife, not just once, but on a daily basis. And in sport, if I want to win the favor of the sport because of my desire to succeed at it, I have to intentionally pursue the best practices that lead a person to succeed in that particular arena. And if I do, then I have the credible claim to, you know, expect or to at least hope that I'm going to be in the running to be successful. But if I don't do that, I don't have any reason to believe that success is going to be mine. That's what I mean by being intentional. That's what I mean by being careful about what we're passive about, because what we're intentional about and what we're passive about has a strong capacity to dictate over the course of time what kind of life and what kind of performance I create in the things that I'm most concerned about.
Unbelievable, because if parents really heard what you really said right there, a lot of people would be doing a lot of different things, you know, right about now. And I can think of already in my own particular life how many times you say to your kids, well, you don't realize how many I've thought about you all day. And they give you the look like, what in the world are you talking about? But you haven't done anything that's intentional to build that relationship with them. You've just done things so that they can live life, and they don't see it. And nor is that building a relationship with them. You're just doing what the role entails to a certain extent.
You know, if I want to be certain about something in my life, very rarely does certainty and passivity work well together. Certainty usually is the byproduct of intentionality. Now, as part of the human race, we're never truly 100% certain about anything. There are very, very intentional parents that have kids that make decisions that you wonder why they're doing what they're doing. So I'm not in any way promising people, you know, the stars. But what I am saying is that we increase the probability of certainty when we pick up our mantle of intentionality on a daily basis and passionately and skillfully pursuing the things that we desire to generate in our lives. That's when we increase the probability of certainty. Sitting back and hoping and waiting for something to happen rarely, if ever, generates the type of life that we want as human beings. I don't know about you, but I've never met a person who has who has made being passive a character trait of their life, and I've never met a person that's happy with their life that way. Have you?
No, because in today's world, passive-aggressive is a negative thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? You know, you sit there and hear about how, you know, it's like this. It's funny because as the more weeks go on and we talk about these things and talk about the philosophy of life, you know, you realize that how limited are we in our intentions, you know, in the sense that we think that being passive would actually get us where we want to go when you're sitting there over there essentially in a parked car. Your car's not even working. You're just sitting there. How would we, as logical people, think that that would produce results?
I think that the reason why we believe that is because we're deluded. We have bought into a type of thinking that actually keeps us stuck. I mean, think of it this way. There's a lot of people that get up every day and they have a vision and an ambition for something that they truly desire and want in their life. But if you ask people, what are you doing to generate the very result that you're seeking, most people would say, I don't know what to do. Like somehow they have to have the perfect plan with the perfect formula, with the perfect recipe. And so instead of just acting and using the results of our actions to be our educator or to be our teacher, we think we have to have it all figured out before we start. And therefore, a lot of people get stuck because they don't understand that the education in refining our activity is in doing the action, not in thinking about the action.
We're going to go to a quick break, man. Somehow we got to find, because you think about what you just said, and the immediate reaction comes to, and it's funny because tonight in Minnesota, Honey Boo Boo is on, you know what I mean? And you watch that show for all you cable viewers, and you watch it and you're going, how in the world did somebody like that, thinking like that, get a show on TV and it be entertaining to other people?
Yeah. Interesting.
All right, we're going to go to a quick break, and we're going to come back and be talking about the next dial on the dashboard.
Best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock. Yeah. You can move in mountains, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you go find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world.
Straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the records you thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know, never even try. Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're dead.
Champion. Be a champion.
astronauts, speech champions, speech truth seekers, speech students, speech teachers, speech politicians, speech preachers, preachers. Be believers, be leaders, speech astronauts, speech champions.
An amazing song. Even after all these weeks, still listening to that, really, it does really make you think, you know, what do you want to be known as? You know what I mean? Amazing, amazing song.
Yeah. Well, you think about people that have acquired the opportunity to be in a Hall of Fame, whether it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the Hockey Hall of Fame, basketball. You wonder what's on their dashboard. You know, I wonder to myself, what did they hold in their mind? You know, what did Michael Jordan have on his dashboard? You know, what does some of the best leaders in the world have on their dashboard? What does a parent that is able to win their kids' hearts over, what do they have on their dashboard? And that's why I want to continue this topic for a couple more weeks on the show, Stephen, because I think we can really create some rich wisdom and ideas for our listeners. So what do you think about us maybe taking one more concept here tonight, and then we'll just do a couple more shows on this concept?
I don't know. I've drank my coffee, and it's only 10 o'clock. You know, we're night owls. You know, we should maybe test our listeners' skills for endurance. Maybe that's we should make this into a six-hour show.
Yeah, and people would still only listen to it for an hour. So we can be in trouble.
The funny thing is that I watched, you know, I was telling you about the John Taylor Gatto thing earlier, and the name of the YouTube video, if anybody's interested, is called The Ultimate History Lesson, and it is 5 hours and 47 minutes long. That's how long that thing is. And you do have a couple times, you know, it's all cool, you're engaged. And then about 2.5, you gotta take a nap, you know, and then you come back up, go do something, you come back and hit another couple hours, and then you finish your strong. But it really is something that tests your willpower when it comes to your listening skills.
Well, I actually wrote down the Ultimate History Lesson, and I'm going to make an effort and a commitment to actually watch some of that, because you've mentioned it a number of times, and I want to implement it and integrate it into our discussion during our shows. Oh. And, you know, the interesting thing that I find is that I am constantly trying to refine my own dashboard. And that's kind of what I hear with you, is you're trying to constantly play around with the gauges to make sure that the gauges that you are buying into are the gauges that are most significant to your ability to live not only your best life, but to create the best, you know, life for those around you. Am I reading you right in that?
Yes. Now, and I have one other thought. I know that we had originally intended to do another subject, but I wanted to throw this out to you because the question I asked earlier is, how do you know which item to put on your dashboard? And so much of that is to say, okay, yes, I'm going to take what you say and I'm going to put on these three things. But so much of life means that, okay, you're going to have to give up one. You can't just keep adding until you got 64 of them. You know what I mean? And one of the things that I think when you really study history, I took a class in immigration, and what I realized was a lot of the ways and the things that were on my dashboard were actually caused by things that were generational. You know, I'm Irish in descent. Or is that right? Yeah. Irish in descent.
Yeah.
And right. when you look back into the Irish community, you see them living life a certain way over in Ireland. And those things are dropped down in a generational basis. So talk to us a little bit about, I mean, there could be things here that you don't even realize that are going on. And they're on your dashboard, but you're not aware of them.
Well, there's not only does our origin impact what's on our dashboard, but our the way we were raised affects our dashboard. Our personality preference affects our dashboard. Our birth order affects our dashboard. There's many factors that affect what we find or what we choose to have as important. Some are unconscious in that we've never even challenged them. We just kind of grow up believing that that's the way it is. Some are things that we have decided based on our life experiences to make important and part of how we live life. But, you know, I don't know about you, Stephen, but in my work, I find more often than not that most people are very passive and very mindless about how they live their lives. It's almost like they wake up every day and they don't really put much mindful gasoline into their tank to determine what they and how they truly want to live. And therefore, it's almost like the unconscious takes over and they are, and I don't say this, they're almost like a victim to their upbringing. And I think we're growing a generation of kids that are a victim to our educational system. You know, some people might look at me and think that I'm actually really, really, you know, mean about education. And you know, as bad as this is to say, I have a hard time finding any long-term value in the education that our kids are getting today. And, you know, one of my passions is to figure out a way to educate our young people in the types of skills that are required to live a great life. How do you, most of our young people are going to be in a significant relationship at some point in their life, and yet I don't think they get any education in how to generate, create, and be responsible in a significant relationship.
I am so 100% with you. I mean, and it's funny because when you mention the word education, it is something that recently I've done a lot of my research time is into, okay, why – how do you think straight? Because I was so tired of going on these emotional ups and downs. And here I am thinking that I'm the adult, you know what I mean? And it was kind of funny because hopefully my son has okayed this story, but it hits this totally perfect. I'm 45 years old. I have three children. My oldest son is 16. We go into a discussion about it was about doing the schedule for the week. You know, we need to plan it out. Well, he just says, well, I'll do it by the day, which usually most 16-year-olds live by the day, right? Well, I'm saying to him, I said, there's more than just you. You have to realize that we have to go this. You know, we have to drive. We only have to go, you know, all this kind of thing. And the funny thing is, as I was trying to discuss with him logically, as soon as he logically hit me with something I couldn't deal with, what do you think I did? Okay, fine, this discussion's over. And I threw the discussion away, and here I am trying to teach my kids to be logical and to have some semblance of understanding of why they're going the direction that they are. But as soon as somebody crosses me that I don't like, well, I just blow them off and say that you're wrong and I'm the dad and you're the son, so you should just listen. So, I mean, there's so many of these things that come and go, and that comes out of what I was taught as a kid. It isn't that do I consciously want to go to my son and say, you know what, whenever you stick me against the wall, I'm purposely going to shut you down and make you feel stupid just because you did that.
Well, and you bring up a great example, and let me just piggyback on it just for a second and say the dashboard that most parents have been brought up with is that you don't give up your sense of power to your kids. If you lose an argument, you've lost your power. If you lose a war, if you will, a power struggle, then you've lost your ability to influence your kids. And really what people are saying is you've lost your ability to control your kids. We very rarely talk about gaining the capacity to influence our kids, because influence is a much more powerful determiner of our long-term capacity to affect our kids' life than control will ever be. That we as parents, and I say we as a group and society of parents, will die on the hill of power and will neglect the powerful dynamic of influence.
Oh, Sean. It is 10 o'clock. It is 1 hour. And we didn't even get to the number two subject. Unbelievable.
We got any to last number thoughts? Two. It was just not the number two on my list. It was the number two that emanated out of our conversation.
Does that mean we're being creative?
That means that we are being attentive. See, on my dashboard is the willingness to be spontaneous and attentive to the energy of the conversation. And the outline is just there in case there is no energy in the conversation.
Well, then we survived and we passed the test. You know, it's always nice when you can check that one off and you get an A for effort then.
I think this conversation was enlightening. It was fun. It was challenging. And, you know, what I would leave the listener with is this. I just would say this week, take some time to really reflect and become aware of what types of information you're valuing as important. And be willing to test and challenge whether that information is really as important as you have believed it to be for as long as you have had it on your dashboard. And consider maybe changing a few gauges. And, you know, if this is a topic that is really, really intriguing to you, then make a commitment to tune in to the following shows, because we're really going to talk about some significant gauges that I think are really, really important to being able to, you know, live a life of success, to achieve, to grow, to learn, and to ultimately, you know, have the kind of joy and fulfillment that I think people seek. And I know I seek it, and I know you do, because we've been friends for a long time, and we could sit and talk forever about this stuff.
Yes, that is. I do think that maybe I should be living the medieval age and be talking to Socrates and Aristotle and all these guys. I should be debating life and right and wrong and creating an argument and substantiating my arguments. And it would be an interesting world, wouldn't it not?
Well, either that or we could just recreate that kind of experience in our own lives and on our own radio shows and see how many people we can engage in that kind of conversation and maybe create a new life-transforming type opportunity for people who truly desire that kind of experience.
And I do think, and you've mentioned over the last months anyways, that people are looking to be engaged nowadays. I think, and the more you talk to people, and it's funny because on the McCarthy Project, I made a concerted effort to really talk to the major influencers, you know, in the world of sport. And in the last week, I've interviewed five Division I coaches. Three in swimming, two in basketball, and a major influencer in triathlon. And it's funny that the majority of what is the messages that they have are so consistent. They're concerned about technology. They're concerned about wanting to pass along this information to young people. And young people seem to be really interested in it. I mean, it really does seem to hold that. I think people are getting tired of, you know, some guy that played basketball 30 years ago, you know, got a DWI. I just don't think that that's important, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
People want to be in relationships of relevancy. They want to believe that the time they spend with people is engaging them to become a better version or a better vision of what they are today. Some people don't know that that's what they want, but when they taste it, they want more of it. And sometimes you have to dish, you know, feed people what they need so they are aware that they want it. And I look at what we're doing as trying to feed people what I believe, through my experiences, people are looking for so that they develop a greater appetite for wanting more of it. I think that's what you're doing at the McCarthy Project. I think you are feeding people things that they crave, even though they don't know that they crave it, so that they want more of it.
It is. I never thought of it that way. But essentially, that is part of being a thought leader as well, is that you see the need, and therefore you're going to give information towards the need. And it might be so far off the dashboard of some people that they don't even realize that they need it.
Most people don't know what they need. You know, when I look at my work with the young people and the athletes and parents I work with, most people call in with their perceived need that isn't their need. They call in with, most of the time they call in wanting me to fix the problem that they created without taking responsibility for creating it. And and so the challenge is to help people dig into a deeper part of themselves so they can see that they're every bit a part of the solution because they were part of the problem. You know, most people are so afraid to admit that they're part of the problem that they never see themselves as part of the solution. So it takes a really wise, articulate person of thought to help people understand how they were responsible for the very problem that they created so they can also see that they're a part of the solution that they desire.
And theoretically, they should feel good about themselves for being on both sides of the fence.
Theoretically, they should feel empowered that if you can be a part of a problem, logically speaking, you can be a part of the solution.
Yes.
But most people are so afraid of being responsible for a problem that they never see that they're also responsible for the solution.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
Well, to be... ending our radio show is probably a good thing for the night. And let's pick this up again next week and just hop right into this.
Absolutely. I am already looking forward to it. And thank you, Sean, for investing your time. I know that the role you play in people's lives sometimes is an unsung one when you are the person to sit down and grind through situations when people don't want to, you know, come forth and say, hey, I am part of the problem. I can imagine the patience and understanding and long suffering that I think goes unsaid. And I want to thank you very much for investing time in people. I think it's very, very important.
Oh, you're kind, my friend. And I truly am having a great time with you and the renewal of our ability to be friends and also work together, it's truly joyful for me to do so. So thanks for your investment. Thanks for your passion around your mission and your ability to consistently step up each day and pursue growth and learning in your life. It's truly fun for me to be a part of this. So thanks for your time, your energy, and your talent as part of this process.
You're welcome. Talk to you next week.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. For everybody else, thank you all for listening. Again, if you would like to get a hold of Sean and talk to him about how you could specifically work with him on a one-on-one basis, give me a call at 612-741-0982 or go to our website, not the Mental Edge. It's just mentaledgetoday.com. Until next week, thank you everybody for listening, and we look forward to continuing our discussion next week, hopefully in the evening, not in the morning.
to be the greatest. You can be the best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world. You can beat the war. You can stop the guy go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up. You can beat the clock. You can move a mountain. You can break rocks. You can be a master. Don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you go find yourself.
Standing in the hall.
Straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you could get the gold. Breaking all the legends he thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride. You're never gonna know, never even try.
Do it for your country, do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're
dead.
Yeah, yeah.